It's a really important piece of work. It's been just about 2 years to the day since we got the proposal. 14 months of that spent writing the standard with over 70 stakeholders from industry, all different sectors, government, advocacy groups and charities, also people that are bringing in academic and lived experience. So it's a really important event to bring everyone together to celebrate the launch of the work.
You are listening to The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards.
I would say start to communicate. That would be engaging, communicate would be another sort of key thing to think about. You know, share the standard internally and to build understanding and buy-in from staff. You know, get staff to read it and to feedback some of their thoughts around, you know, what are we already doing? What is in the standard? What is an organization we're already doing? What's familiar? And maybe from reading that, kind of what are the gaps in the organization as approach to suicide prevention?
Hello, this is Matthew Childs, and welcome to The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards. Now, the voices you heard at the top of the episode were those of Lockheed Humphreys of BSI and standards maker Jamie Compton-Ray. And they were speaking about the standard BS 3480, Suicide and the Workplace, the subject of this episode. Lockheed is the BSI committee manager responsible for developing BS 3480. And she was speaking at the recent launch of the standard at Speaker's House in the House of Commons. And Jamie joined me a few days later to explore the standard in more detail, including what organisations should do in the first 100 days of implementation. Now, BS 3480 is the UK's first standard dedicated to addressing the risk of suicide and its impact in the workplace. Research from the charity Mind and the National Institute for Health and Care Research shows that around 6,000 people die by suicide in the UK each year. One in four adults has contemplated it, and each death affects an estimated 135 people. The standard brings together evidence and expert insight to help organisations recognise risk, respond safely, and support those affected. It provides a practical framework for all organisations, no matter their size or sector, covering things like policies, safety planning, communication, training, and other tools for HR and line managers. While not a clinical guide, it does highlight where specialist expertise is needed and encourages open, stigma-free conversations. Developed collaboratively with government, charities, advocacy groups, industry experts, and those with lived experience, BS 3480 has already been referenced in the UK government's Men's Health Strategy. And at the time of recording, with over 4,000 downloads and growing, it is already helping organisations build cultures of care, supporting colleagues when it matters most. For this episode, I spoke to Jamie about why BS 3480 is such a landmark standard, his role in its development, and those steps organisations should take in the first 100 days of putting the standard into practice. And not only that, because it's the Standard Show, Jamie also reflects on his own standards journey, what motivated him to get involved, and what continues to inspire his involvement today. Now, before we get down to it, here's Cindy Parakill with a quick reminder.
Hey, just a quick reminder to follow, rate, and review the podcast wherever you listen. Want to get in touch or find us on socials? All the links you need are in the show notes.
An integrative counsellor and therapist with over 15 years clinical experience in addiction and suicide prevention services, Jamie Compton-Ray is Chief Operating Officer at the National Centre for Suicide Prevention, Education and Training, which delivers suicide first aid and RSPH Level 4 training across the UK. And he's a standards maker too, a member of BSI Committee HS2, responsible for the development of BS 3480. Now, this is an episode in two parts. In part two, we get really practical. I speak to Jamie about how organisations can make a strong start with BS 3480 in the first 100 days of implementation, where to focus that early effort, the role of leadership, and how to measure progress, while keeping momentum and staff engagement high. In this part one, I speak to Jamie about his role in the development of BS 3480 and how the standard guides organisations in using their employee assistance programmes, or EAPs, and embedding that all-important culture of care. But I started by asking Jamie to give me an overview of BS 3480 and to tell me why the standard is so significant.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that over 5,000 people end their life, you know, in the UK, and most of those people are of working age. So, you know, when we think about that, this standard really was birthed from those statistics. Those statistics are real people. And those are the people who will have been in workplaces. So we really wanted to look at that standard and have something that was fit for purpose. So we kind of covered many of the different aspects that organisations will either struggle with or will need in terms of implementing meaningful suicide prevention within the workplace. So the kind of start of the standard really focuses in on quite simplistic things, but things that are really common in workplaces, which is how we talk about it. So the language that we use around suicide and suicide prevention. So we give some really useful steers as to what might be unhelpful when we talk about suicide prevention within the workplace and what might be helpful, kind of moving toward away from what's good or what's bad, and shaming people into, you know, the language police and what you should and shouldn't say, but really just kind of giving people an insight as to what might be helpful and how they might open up conversations around suicide. We also then start to debunk some myths, because there's lots of myths out there around suicide. You know, even talking about suicide is one of those myths. So we shouldn't talk about it because we're going to plant this idea in people's heads. So we kind of debunk some of those really common myths so that people, when they first pick up this guide, some of those concerns that they might have or they might have heard from others are instantly sort of dissolved. So it gives people then the opportunity to read the rest of the guide with a bit of fresh eyes and a bit of curiosity as to, okay, well, actually, if that myth isn't true, okay, well, then what can I do and what is doable here?
Just on that, Jamie, on those sort of myths or sort of, you know, gaps or challenges, you know, what particular myths in existing organizational approaches does this standard aim to address?
Well, one of the first ones is that if we talk about suicide, it plants this idea of suicide. That's one of the biggest myths that actually, outside of organisations, stops people from even entering into helpful conversations around suicide. And it comes from stigma. People are scared of entering into this conversation. And there's actually little to no evidence to suggest that mentioning suicide or talking about suicide gives someone the idea that, and they'll then go on and die by suicide. Actually, there's so much more evidence to suggest that actually by talking about suicide, that person's more likely to be alive. But it's a prolific myth that still exists today that, you know, if we even mention the word, then that's going to give them an idea to go on and die by suicide.
Just on the language, actually, Jamie, because the language is very specific within the standards. Talk me through some of the sort of considerations you undertook when determining the language of the standard.
Yeah, so this was one that we were so conscious about, and it took a lot of sort of conversation and dialogue within the drafting panel as well, was that there's so many ways in which we can talk about this, and we wanted it to be really clear. And the reason for this is because most of us have all worked in organizations and in done consultancy and everything in between. And whenever you're dealing with suicide or you have someone who has who's struggling with suicide thoughts or behaviors, how you intervene is very different to how if someone is having thoughts, and how you intervene is very different if someone is doing suicide behaviors. So we tried to move away from terms like suicidal, because that's something that we hear all the time, you know, oh, they were suicidal. And there's a number of things in that. One, there feels like now there's an element of judgment that's attached to that word. Oh, they were suicidal. It's almost like you can feel the eyes roll. So we wanted to move away from that, those sort of more, again, stigmatizing language, and have a standard that really promotes helpful language and sees a person more than their behaviors. And then the second thing was that suicidal as a term is extremely vague and is very unhelpful whenever you're trying to support a person or manage risk as an organization. So actually, if you separate suicidal out into suicide thoughts and suicide behaviors, then it means you have a much clearer direction of travel. If someone said to me, oh, you know, Jamie's having thoughts of suicide, I'm thinking to myself, okay, they're just thoughts. So this person isn't in imminent risk or danger. So how I support this person is very different to, oh, Jamie's doing suicide behaviors. Because that to me is Jamie is at imminent risk of death and we need to do something very different here. Mm-hmm. So we tried to separate those two out. And I think throughout the standard, we've been really cautious to do that so that we're giving organizations more clear steers as to what to do and that thoughts are not actions.
I mean, this is a standard obviously driven by sort of consideration and care here for the subject matter. I just wonder what, you know, in general terms, how do you feel it will change the way organizations think about sort of mental health broadly and suicide prevention?
Yeah, well, there's a whole section in there around organizational culture. And I think that's what we're also aiming for this standard to impact is the organizational culture of things. We're hoping that by organizations addressing their language, thinking about how they talk about suicide in a more meaningful way, in a more specific way, debunking some of those myths, you know, all of that sort of hopefully will lend to a culture where suicide and talking about suicide prevention is more open and more accessible because people do struggle, and when people struggle, they may think of suicide, and it's not uncommon. So, you know, if someone is struggling within a workplace, our hope is that this standard would really give organizations the opportunity to implement meaningful suicide prevention so that if that person was struggling around their thoughts, they would A, know who to go to, B, go to someone who felt like they were competent and capable of having the conversation with them, and C, be able to be signposted to supports and be connected to external or internal providers that would help them stay alive for as long as they need that. And that's really the kind of goal. And every other part of that standard really is looking at what organizations can do within, you know, their strategy or policy or within their prevention or within their intervention, or if someone were to die by suicide, what would they do? How would they approach that and be really proactive around some of these things so that, you know, whenever someone does maybe attempt suicide or die by suicide and their colleagues and the staff are rightly emotional about that and impacted by that someone isn't then starting to scramble to start to think about what to do in that moment. Actually, this guide gives them that before any of this happens, and it's encouraging organizations to really think about that as a proactive, preventative approach rather than something that you grab in the moment.
So in terms of your role then, Jamie, your organization as well, what was that in terms of developing this standard? And maybe talk us through some of the biggest challenges or insights during the process.
So this was my first experience developing a standard. So I was a bit of a newbie and had my eyes opened because I've been involved in obviously collaborative work before with a lot of different people. But one thing I would say is about this standard and is, again, coming back to my ignorance of not really being involved in standard writing before, was the amount of people that were involved in writing in this whole standard in general. You know, I think I was at the launch event there, and that standard production usually only has like drafting panels usually have between 6 and 7 people. Like, they're usually quite small. Whereas this had like 20 people, like, developing a standard, and over 60 people on all of the committees. It was a huge group of suicide prevention practitioners coming together. And usually my experience of suicide prevention practitioners working together is, which is quite ironic, is sometimes that, you know, because we're so passionate and it comes from usually experiences of bereavement or personal experiences or whatever it might be, is that, you know, people obviously want to have their point of view across, and that can be sometimes a challenge within working together to try and get a a piece of work done. And I actually say for this experience and my experience in writing this and developing this standard was that wasn't the case. I felt like everyone was really, in terms of the drafting panel, which I was involved in, was really respectful of each other's opinions. And there was absolutely healthy debate around certain topics, because let's face it, you know, some people work in different sectors and some people have different experiences and all want that sort of reflected within the standard. So there was some really, really great discussions, especially around things like the language section. So when I was saying about, when I brought that idea that I don't think suicidal should be in the standard, you know, that was a real healthy conversation around the reasons why. Yeah, it was a real privilege to work alongside colleagues who I've known for many years, and some that I've met for the first time. But I think we had a real shared vision, which is we all wanted this to be meaningful and we wanted this to be used and not something that just sat on a shelf. So I think that really drove us to work really well together and, you know, really put our heads together to think about how does this work for, you know, Joe Bloggs, who just picks this up. I think it was Peter Kelly who said at the start of things, he was like, you know, your mother needs to be able to pick up the standard and read it and it makes sense. And that's something that always just stuck with me whenever we were drafting, was when I was writing sections of this. So I was directly involved in the myths, in the language section, in the prevention section, and in the intervention section. And then I was also the one who pulled together the training principles for commission and training, suicide prevention training. So whenever I was sitting down to draft parts of those sections or some of those sections, I had really that in the forefront of my mind, was that if my mum had to pick this up and read this, would this make sense to her? Because I could be really technical and really, you know, academic in terms of how I write this and how this kind of is proposed, but actually that's not who it's for. And I think that was our main challenge as the drafting panel, was having to keep on coming back to, this isn't for suicide prevention practitioners, and this is for organizations who know nothing about suicide prevention. So it needs to be as obvious, it needs to be as simplistic, but also have that complexity as well, because it is a complex subject. And I really feel like as a drafting panel that we met that brief, because I gave it to my mom and she read it and she was like, that makes sense to me. But I think that definitely was a challenge, because you have so many wonderful, respected suicide prevention practitioners sitting in a room together who all have such great experience, both lived and professional, and having a guide that actually wasn't for us was a real challenge, but a real win, I think, because I think organizations will pick this up and be like, actually, this was made for us. That's our hope.
Well, exactly. I mean, standards only have value if organizations use them. It's all about that practical application. Exactly. Now, you mentioned earlier, Jamie, about sort of culture. I want to ask you a broad question around that. So how does these standards guide organizations in embedding a culture of mental health awareness and proactive suicide prevention? I'm thinking really practical terms here, you know, in terms of how it interacts maybe with their existing policies or health and safety regulations. So how does a standard go about really embedding that culture?
So I think the first thing is for organizations to read this standard and start to identify what it is they're already doing. My experience is when I go into organizations and I'm doing consultancy around, maybe it's like implementing suicide first aid approaches within their organization or whatever it might be, you know, one of the first things that I do, and which this standard will be really helpful in, is assessing what organizations are already doing. Because organizations will be doing quite a lot of suicide prevention work. They just haven't specifically labeled it as suicide prevention. And one of the things that organizations will be asked to do within the standard, really, or in this guide, is to identify a leader, a key leader within their organization who can really promote and champion suicide prevention within the workplace. And also that they are separate from the mental health person or the mental health champion, so that suicide prevention has its own dedicated person resource. And I think in terms of culture, that will be a big shift, because organizations quite often what they do, and I think this is because of stigma and shame, which usually is attached to suicide, is that suicide is often lumped in with mental health provision. And whenever people do mental health provision, it almost like it's like they automatically tick the mental or the suicide prevention box. Oh, we did mental health training the other day, or we did a something around mental health, so that's that ticked. That's the suicide prevention, you know, activity done for the year. And actually what we're really calling for is having dedicated suicide prevention activity so that it has its own space and people are talking about it more. People are more comfortable about it. People are more confident around talking about suicide prevention. So that's one thing in terms of culture we hope that the guide will really encourage organizations to think about is to actually give a leader within the organization that sort of role, designated role of suicide prevention champion or suicide prevention lead or whatever it might be, so that there is this dedicated focus, so that it has its airtime and it has that dedication to making it meaningful. Because otherwise it's like minestrone soup. It just gets mixed in with everything else and it's hard to kind of pick out what's what. So that's one thing that the guide really looks at. As I said, the other thing would be for organizations then to reflect on their policy and procedures and, you know, what certain things will, I guess, implement suicide prevention, what will facilitate that within their organization. You know, it's usually really surprising how much suicide prevention activity is already happening within a workplace. And whenever you actually sit down and you start to look at it, you know, is there clear supervision within the workplace? You know, how are staff sicknesses managed? You know, is there access to EAP? EAP is such a great tool in terms of suicide prevention. And again, I go into organizations quite often and I ask the question, do you have an EAP? And lots of people shake their heads. Yes, yes, we have EAP. And then my next question usually is, do you know how to access it? And I'd say maybe about 30% of the heads then start to shake and the rest start to say, no, I haven't a clue. Well, that's really great suicide prevention work. Go away, find out how to access your EAP. Because if you were in crisis and you were having thoughts of suicide, that would be a really great resource. But one thing that will prevent you from getting help and support is knowing that they're how to access that help and support. So, you know, is there things like small things like that can be done to really encourage that culture? You know, what about the culture around the EAP? Is it something that's seen as helpful, or is it something that's seen as, oh, they just collect data on us and give it to our managers? You know, is there a piece of work that needs to be done around that? You know, well-being surveys, you know, what is the meaning of those? Can suicide prevention be implemented into those? So there's lots of things that organizations probably are already doing. Maybe they just need to look at those and say, actually, we do those really well, which is great. And this standard will really support that. And we're already doing quite a lot in terms of culture. But maybe there's some things that might just need tweaked, tailored, changed, implemented, thought through. So that, I guess, the psychological safety of the workers and the employees and the customers and vulnerable people who use those services get the best support.
Standards affect all of us, every day, everywhere. By defining good practice, they help people and organizations do things better. Each year, standards bodies publish thousands of standards, and we're always looking for more people like you to join our growing community of standards makers. We welcome applicants from all backgrounds, areas of expertise, and career stages. Our goal is simple: to bring a balance of perspectives to the table. As a standards maker, you can help improve how things are made and done, whether it's building more inclusive workplaces, improving healthcare, advancing AI governance, accelerating climate action, and much more. If you want to make a difference and help shape the world through standards, start your standards making journey today. Details on how to get involved are in the show notes.
So, Jamie, you'd mentioned about the sort of the Standard helping change the culture of an organization. Maybe the organizations are doing more than they already think at the moment. You also talked about the Standard being readable by your mom, which you felt you were you'd achieve that particular goal. And I think that's really important, isn't it? That standards are easily understood by the people who are reading them, and by being easily understood, it means they want to get on and implement that particular standard. So I want to look at the sort of the first 100 days for organizations adopting BS 3480. So if they're starting to implement it, what should be their top priorities in those first 100 days?
So there's probably a number of things organizations should really start to think about. One would be to really think about strengthening that leadership commitment to suicide prevention and that governance around it. And I talked a bit about that earlier, which was, you know, really thinking about having that dedicated person for suicide prevention within their workplace. So that's a really doable action within the next 100 days, would be to find someone who feels like this would fit within their remit, who's passionate about it, who wants to kind of see it progress separately from, and obviously connected to, but separately from the mental health agenda as well. I would also say then a good place to start would be reviewing the policies. And if we're talking about culture, this all sort of fits in. So using the standard really to assess whether the existing policies and procedures within the organization support people who are thinking about suicide or engaging in suicide behaviors. And that might really highlight then gaps in readiness. Because that's one thing that we see quite a lot on in organizations. You can go in and do lots of wonderful training, but actually if the direction of travel isn't correct, or people are unsure as to what the direction of travel is after a suicide intervention, or even during a suicide intervention, because the policies and procedures don't map against it, well then that's an issue. That can be a gap. So, you know, really encouraging organizations to really look at their policies and procedures and see which actually connect and reflect the standard, and which ones maybe don't, or which ones are missing, or which ones, you know, they might need to address. So in terms of policy and culture, I think that those are really doable actions within the next 100 days, which would be assessing policies, procedures, hopefully identifying gaps in organizational readiness, and then strengthen that leadership commitment and governance. I think the next thing would be really then to think about building staff confidence, because this is what this standard is about. It's about the staff. It's about everyone within a workplace. So the standard really, there's a section within the standard which is in around prevention, and it's also in the intervention section, which is really to increase staff's confidence in recognizing and appropriately responding to signs of distress. Because lots of people recognize distress, but it's actually the people then who recognize and then do something about it that make the difference. So really what we're looking at there is within the next 100 days is for organizations to thinking about commissioning training or awareness initiatives. That's something that could be absolutely doable. And there's a really wonderful section in the standard which is the principles for commissioning suicide prevention training. And this was something that we wanted to really promote, because so many suicide prevention training usually happens, for right or for wrong, usually happens and is commissioned usually within a lift. You know, two people get in a lift and they say, oh, we really need some suicide prevention training. And someone says, oh, I can do that. They're like, oh, great, you've got the job. And then next minute, suicide prevention training is rolled out within an organization. And that training might be really wonderful, but actually, what we're trying to really promote within the guide is having regulated, commissioned, trauma-informed, culturally appropriate training that meets the mark. We really want organizations to get the best training. So, you know, having a piece of training that actually really meets the standard is really important, so that the end person who sits on that training program walks away with that increased confidence and the decrease in anxiety in addressing and having conversations around suicide prevention and intervening. That is the difference between just recognizing someone's distress and the other person who recognizes and actually does something about it.
Jamie, you've mentioned leadership quite a few times throughout our conversation. I just wonder, in these early days, you know, the first 100 days, how important is leadership engagement?
It's so important. Even just thinking about training provision, you know, actually training your leadership first is probably the best thing to do, so that there's buy-in and seeing the benefit of the training and seeing the benefit of how this works. But I think really strong leadership is what makes the difference in terms of implementing anything meaningful in terms of suicide prevention. I always kind of describe it almost like a dance. And we've all heard that analogy of the leader needs to be on the dance floor at times, but then also needs to get off the dance floor and get up onto the balcony and overview the whole steps, like the whole dance. And I think that's definitely what we need. We need leaders who are seeing the whole bigger picture, seeing the full dance, and then actually get also leaders who get on the dance floor and walk the steps and lead the dance with people. And are able to, you know, understand how suicide prevention fits into the organizational structure, but then also are able to intervene when there's thoughts of suicide, or able to speak to those parts in the guide where maybe supporting a bereaved loved one and have to demonstrate some leadership. And I guess that in itself, you know, if someone were to die within an organization from suicide, that requires really sensitive, skilled leadership to manage that experience.
So you mentioned that leadership clearly important. You talked about that policies as well, and also sort of training. I just wonder, if you're trying to build confidence and momentum within an organization, are there any other small wins organizations can aim for?
I would say start to communicate. That would be engaging, communicate would be another sort of key thing to think about. You know, share the standard internally to build understanding and buy-in from staff. You know, get staff to read it and to maybe feedback some of their thoughts around, you know, what are we already doing? What is in the standard? What is an organization we're already doing? What's familiar? And maybe from reading that, kind of what are the gaps in the organization as approach to suicide prevention? Kind of using it to engage with sort of those senior leaders or boards or stakeholders, whoever it might be, to kind of really open that dialogue, because it's a really useful standard. But as you said, it's only useful if people take it off the shelf and actually read it and do something with it. So, you know, I think that would be a really wonderful way to start this conversation. There's so much conversation around the BSI, 30480 at the moment. And I think, you know, having people read it rather than just senior leaders would be the win. And getting that, I guess, commitment, you can kind of endorse the standard or pledge your commitment to the standard as well. So, you know, organizations pledging or endorsing the standard publicly, or even internally, really shows a commitment to creating safer, more supportive, confident workplaces around addressing suicide. So I think that's a really good small win that organizations of any size could do.
When organizations are sort of implementing standards, they want to obviously measure and assess progress against them. Obviously, we're talking here in the first 100 days of using BS 30 480. I'm really interested in other practical tips here around that, measuring and assessing the early progress. So what sort of indicators or signals might suggest that the standard is being embedded successfully?
Yeah. Well, I would say if there's open dialogue with managers and staff, then one of the things that might indicate or be a signal that the standard is being implemented successfully is sort of managers or leaders or whoever is looking after others report increased confidence and having supportive conversations around suicide. And that might be formally through supervision, it might be informally through other channels. But actually, just by talking about suicide and encouraging that culture change to shift towards having more open conversations about suicide, actually just hearing the word suicide in conversation more and more and more will be an indicator that things are starting to shift and change. Because so many organizations, you know, don't even use the word, won't even use the word. So, you know, that's something that we could definitely see a real change in. That's kind of really directly related to staff feeling safer to speak up. And this might often show up maybe in wellbeing surveys or maybe again in informal feedback before it shows up in any maybe, you know, formal data. But, you know, all of those sorts of things, you know, good leadership, driving culture change, good training that's high quality and it gives people the confidence, you know, all of that will really encourage that sort of open conversations around suicide, which might be indicators. There might also be a reduction in sort of firefighting because what this guide is really pushing for is to have proactive conversations around suicide prevention. You know, don't wait until there's a death to do something about it. Think about it now. If there was someone to die by suicide within our workplace, what would we do? Who would we speak to? What would we get in terms of support? You know, what would be the conversations that we have? What would be the communication that we would have? Who would we communicate it to? So that, I guess, seeing fewer crisis-driven responses and more early intervention might be a really good indicator that the guide is being implemented well. If you were looking at, I guess, policies and procedures being used, I guess, as intended. So, you know, is the return to work process, does it now include maybe a mental health check-ins or, you know, our HR and, you know, health and safety collaborating more closely together? You know, there might be some working groups that are put together to try and figure this out. You know, we could definitely start to see shifts there. And I think our hope, and I see this so much within organizations whenever I go in, is our hope is to move towards consistency across teams so that there's not these pockets of kind of good practice or first aiders that we all go to. Oh, Jamie's just really empathic, so we'll just send all of the vulnerable customers to Jamie because Jamie knows how to talk about these sorts of things, and I am not really empathic, so I don't really know. But actually moving away from that and moving towards more, as I said, a more population-based approach to suicide prevention so that if needed, anyone could have these types of conversations. And actually, if we've been trained in a model that is trauma-informed, evidence-based, externally regulated, you know, has that high quality stamp, then everyone will be kind of talking the same sort of language and using the same sort of consistency of language. And that's hugely helpful when it comes to debriefing, supervision, staff team meetings. You know, I can see a consistency in language being really something that helps organizations make sense of this because helps identify gaps easier. Okay, Jamie, where were you in the, say, suicide first aid model? Oh, you only got to step two. Okay, well, what could we do to help Jamie get to step three in the next conversations that he have around suicide? So it builds, I guess, a consistency approach. And I think if you could see consistency, I think that will be a really good indicator that this is working and that it's being implemented and embedded successfully.
Just thinking, Jamie, what might be your overall message here to organisations who maybe read the standard, they've listened to this podcast episode? What would be your overall message to them about BS 3480?
I would say lean in with a bit of curiosity because there is a lot of shame and stigma around suicide still within workplaces and within society. So, you know, that might be enough for people not even to read it. So I really just would encourage people to be a little curious as to, you know, what the standard could offer and what it can bring. As a drafting panel, we really worked hard to design this for organizations of all sizes, not just ones that are huge and have lots of resource, but actually for organizations who are very, very small, maybe five people less. So there's something in it for everyone. But it's really to encourage organizations to practice a bit of discernment, to pick it up, have a read of it, see what, again, reflect maybe on what they're already doing, what they already are committed to. And hopefully that will maybe identify some gaps. And it's not to say that you have to do everything within this guide. And if you don't, you're suicide prevention isn't meaningful. Absolutely not. Actually, if you're only doing one thing in this guide, your suicide prevention would be meaningful. So it's really for organizations to read and for them to really think about their organization and think about suicide prevention as a dedicated focus, not just something that is lumped in with mental health. For those two things to have their right airtime for both of them and for suicide prevention to really, I guess, start to become more be in our conversations, be in our work, for people to feel more confident and to have that decrease in anxiety around talking about suicide and intervening. Because those are all the things that are barriers that prevent people from getting help and support. So our hope is that organizations will read this and really engage with it in a meaningful way, and move people from places of danger and isolation to places of safety and support.
Now, I couldn't let Jamie go without asking him about his standards journey, something regular listeners know we love to explore. So I asked him to do just that. How and when did his standards journey start? And where is he now?
As I mentioned earlier, this is my first time writing a standard or being involved in a standard in any way. And it's also kind of very reminiscent of what I said in terms of commission and training in a lift. That's kind of how it happened. Someone said to me, a colleague said to me, I think you'd be really good. There's a standard being developed and I think you'd be really good. Can I put you in touch with someone? And I said, oh, yeah, sure, no worries. Not really understanding what it was or really what the expectation would be. So I said yes, and then I met with Marcus Long, who was the sort of overall committee sort of organizer, and we just had a very brief conversation around my working background and you know, what I could offer, what I could contribute. And Marcus said, oh, we'd love to have you, please be involved in all panels. Can you be involved in the committee, the overall committee, the communications panel and the drafting panel? And eager me was like, yes, I'll do it all. And then quickly realized I couldn't do it all. It was far too much. So I had to really just think about, okay, in terms of the skills and expertise that I have, I just felt that something that we really pride ourselves on in suicide prevention or suicide first aid is that, you know, we are really commonsensical, I guess, around suicide prevention, but it's based off strong evidence and a trauma-informed lens, and really understanding that we have such a responsibility when we talk about this subject matter that we don't want to re-traumatize people, and we have to do it sensitively. And I just thought that could be really added value within the standard. So I kind of leant towards more drafting it, and kind of stuck with the drafting panel and kind of dipped my toes into the communications panel whenever I could. But most of my time was then sat within the drafting panel. And as I said, it was a pleasure to be involved in. It was challenging because you're obviously writing standards, and it's a very different way to write. You know, there's so many, I guess, guidelines, and I don't want to say rules because it feels like that's fairly quite strong and it brings me back to being in school, but it's almost like, you know, BSI have a very particular specific way of writing and what you can use and what you can't use and what you can say and what you can't say. And that whole process was really interesting. And find it really refreshing to, I guess, spend time with colleagues writing something that actually is going to have such a huge impact on organizations in all of the work that we do.
And we often find, Jamie, that people are either sort of stumble into standards or get seduced by standards. And it sounds like you kind of stumbled into it. I just wonder, have you now been seduced? How has the experience been for you?
Yeah, it's been really good, really interesting. I've really enjoyed it. I have. I feel like I definitely stumbled and now I've been seduced 100%. Like if the British Standards came and asked me to marry them, I'd say yes.
Well, what's next for you on your journey?
My hope is that this, because it is the first, I think, it is the first suicide prevention in the workplace standard in the world. So, you know, our hope is that the standard is going to be a global standard at some point or be, you know, go that wide. So my hope is that because I've been involved in this one, that I hopefully might be involved in that. And, you know, outside of that, my hope is that, you know, as someone who's been really involved in the drafting of it, would be that, you know, organizations, that I could impart that knowledge or that information to organizations as well and really help them along on their meaningful suicide prevention journey. Because I think, you know, that support, that guidance can be really useful whenever you're sort of trying to find the wood from the trees.
You've obviously had a great experience being involved in this very important standard. What might you say to other people considering getting involved in standards?
Oh, I'd say do it. I'd give it a go. We'll definitely push you outside of your comfort zone because, as I said, they have a very specific way of writing. But if you feel like you have something to offer or something to contribute, give it a go. You might be sitting around a panel with people who feel like they have so much more experience than you do or so much more accomplished in their field than you. But I would hazard a guess to say everyone feels like that. And yeah, I'd say give it a go, because ultimately you could be contributing to something that actually really makes a difference. You know, this was about suicide, but, you know, I'd say any standard ultimately is about keeping people safe or keeping people protected or encouraging people to think about safety and protection. So really to get involved if you can, and hopefully you might be contributing to something that will be meaningful and will be used.
My thanks to Jamie Compton-Ray for talking to me about the standard BS 3480, Suicide and the Workplace, and for sharing his standards journey. Now, to find out more about the themes and issues raised in this episode and about how to get involved in standards, then follow the links in the show notes. And the show notes are also where you can find details of our socials and all the other ways to get in touch with us here on The Standard Show.
You have been listening to an episode of The Standard Show, the podcast that brings you the stories behind the standards.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.